Facebook.com.
Well, once again, thank you for joining me here on this Monday, April 18th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke. I'll be your host for the next hour here. We've got a really great show coming your way. We'll be joined here in a few seconds by Philip Rossman Reich of OrlandoMagicDaily.com. We'll get some thoughts from him on what he's seen so far in the NBA. Also, take a look ahead to the Monday night card with three games on the docket. Speaking of the NBA, we'll hear the first of three installments of Cole Ryan's Betting the Buckets segment here for this week. He recorded one for us this morning. A lot of excellent stuff there in that, so that'll be coming your way a little bit later in the show. I'll talk MLB and NHL as I do on just about every broadcast, and we'll see what else happens along the way. And then, of course, after this segment with Philip, I'll tell you about what's going on the rest of the week here on Bang the Book Radio. But no reason to waste any time here. Go ahead and get into our first NBA segment with Philip Rossman Reich from OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Philip, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing very well. Appreciate it. Good to talk to you here and be a little bit different here. We don't really have any Orlando Magic stuff to talk about, but NBA playoffs, an exciting time of year to be sure. What's been the biggest surprise to you so far here between, you know, the game ones of each series?
You know, I think the biggest surprise to me was I thought this was going to be the year Toronto really turned the corner and kind of put some demons to rest. And, you know, right off the bat for the playoffs, they kind of just, I mean, they kind of just laid an egg. It was a really disappointing effort from them on Saturday afternoon. Obviously, Paul George kind of went nuts, but Toronto didn't really make any adjustments. They kind of, you could kind of see them tensing up, and all the problems of the last 2 years seemed to kind of multiply and get worse for them. And it was really discouraging to see because, you know, that they had a really, really good season. They've got a good team. And for whatever reason, they struggle to show up in the playoffs.
Well, and I think that that's a series that we'll definitely touch on a little bit more here because these two teams do play tonight. And, you know, obviously, as you said, Toronto with those playoff demons, I mean, extra pressure on the Raptors to be sure. One thing that's a little bit of a concern to me here is you look around the first round series and, you know, Cleveland with a comeback win over Detroit in a game that was a little bit more exciting than it probably should have been. Indiana with that upset victory. Miami blew out Charlotte. Golden State, of course, blew out Houston, which we expected. San Antonio, no issues with Memphis. The Thunder blew out Dallas. So not a whole lot of competitive balance here in some of these series.
No. And some of it, I think, had to do, like, you look at Miami, Charlotte. Some of that has to do with experience. You know, Charlotte's gotten, you know, as a franchise, has an 11-game playoff losing streak. So that's a team that hasn't had much postseason success and doesn't have a lot of postseason experience on their roster already. Miami came ready to play and ready for the moment. You know, obviously Memphis has their injury issues with San Antonio, you know, as they're playing a really good San Antonio team, and Golden State's a juggernaut. I mean, it's not surprising that a one blows out an eight, but you know, the thing about the NBA is it's not like the NCAA tournament where it's a one-off game. There's a lot of pressure on that one game. That teams know that there's a time for adjustments, that the series isn't over. And so, yeah, things can sometimes get out of hand. But at the same time, there's time to get things right, and it's not indicative of what's going to happen the next game. Anything can happen, you know, the next time you go out. And especially for a lot of the teams that lost on the road, they still have their goal in front of them of splitting those first two games and getting home court advantage and bringing things back home with some competitiveness to go in the series.
There are two teams I want to focus on here. Both of them lost on Sunday. The first one, we've already touched on them a little bit, is the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets, I thought, you know, were a team that was a pretty live dog here in this series. I mean, obviously, since the All-Star break, there aren't many teams that have played as well as Charlotte has. Miami comes out, and, you know, it's not just that they won the game. It's not just that they won the game big. It's that Miami scored 123 points here in this game. What can Charlotte do to adjust to make game two a little bit closer?
I mean, they've got to find an answer to Hassan Whiteside. I think that's a pretty big one for them. He really does change the game, and he's the big matchup advantage that Miami has. The Hornets, you know, run out Cody Zeller to start at center. There was some talk from reporters that, you know, maybe Steve Clifford considers starting Al Jefferson, but neither of those guys really locked down a guy like Hassan Whiteside, because, you know, Whiteside's just a big shot blocker. And so Charlotte's got to figure out a way to handle him both on offense and on defense. I mean, you think they attacked him decently well, but, you know, Whiteside changes plenty of shots. So they've got to find a way to get shots at the basket, you know, maybe pull them away from the rim and the paint a little bit and attack the rim. They can't be settling for jump shots and getting stuck in that kind of game with Whiteside in there. And so, you know, that's going to be really key, I think, the rest of the series is how Charlotte manages the things that Whiteside does.
Well, I think what's really interesting here is Miami with that lopsided win, a 32-point victory. Of course, they outscored Charlotte by 19 in the first quarter. So, you know, things kind of settled down a little bit from there for the Hornets. Mm-hmm. But by the time the second half rolled around, they knew that the game was over. So, you know, they probably played things a little bit differently. Looking ahead to Wednesday's game two here, Miami was a 4.5-point favorite on Sunday. They're a 5-point favorite on Wednesday. So we see a big lopsided blowout win, and we see the line not really adjusted a whole lot. So that's something I wanted to bring to our listeners' attention here, that you know, you really don't want to overreact to what you see in one game here in the playoffs, because it may not be predictive of the rest of the series, as you alluded to, Philip.
Absolutely, and remember too that you know this is a little bit of a chess match, and you know if you have an adjustment that you're thinking about or thinking of tinkering with, you don't want to show anyone that adjustment in a blowout. You know, you kind of want to kind of stick to the game plan and put new things in behind closed doors and try and catch them by surprise in the next game. So, you know, certainly whereas maybe in a regular season game, you'd see a team really push to get back into the game in a situation like that, you know, make some changes, try kind of a screwy odd lineup. But in the playoffs, you don't want to do that. You don't want to tip your hand. You don't want to show the other team anything. You kind of maybe just want to build some momentum heading into the next game, heading into practice with a strong finish, but you don't necessarily want to show your opponent anything new or different that you might try for the next game, because then they have a chance to prepare for it too. So you know, I think playoff games are a little more susceptible to blowouts than regular season games for that reason.
I don't know if you were burning the midnight oil last night, but Portland and the Clippers, the late game, Clippers won by 20 in that one. And what really stands out to me here is that the Clippers won the second half by 12, outscored Portland 31-24 in the third, 34-29 in the fourth, in a game that was pretty back and forth in the first half. I mean, the Clippers took an 8-point lead in the halftime, but you know, the way that they took things over in the second half, is that something that is predictive of this series? I mean, does Portland just not have enough to make adjustments, particularly in the second half?
You know, I don't think it's quite predictive. I mean, last night, you know, obviously Portland has to figure out a way to score more consistently. And I think that falls on their two key players. They've relied heavily all year on Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, and both had pretty poor games last night. You know, I think at halftime, Portland was shooting something like 37%. They're still in the game with that, but they needed that to swing back up if they wanted a chance to win. And that obviously didn't happen. You know, where Portland still has to kind of get things down is on the defensive end, but especially guarding Chris Paul. And that's not necessarily Damian Lillard's strong suit on defense, although he's improved there a lot, but you know, they've got to find a way to get Lillard going. I don't think we'll see Lillard have kind of the performance that he had last night again. I think he'll figure things out. He's obviously a very good player, but we'll see what happens with them moving forward. I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not sure that that's the Portland team we're going to see the rest of the series, and I'm still expecting a pretty good series with them.
So I wanted to touch on Portland, but I also want to touch on the Clippers here. And you know, this is a team that had a very interesting offseason, to say the least. And it seemed like things, you know, at the outset for Doc Rivers' team, you know, I don't know if it was a continuity issue or some kind of thing like that early in the year. And then, of course, you get the situation with Blake Griffin where he's out for a while, then punches a team manager and, you know, all hell kind of breaks loose there. But rather than this game being an indictment on Portland, is this maybe an indication of you know, how strong this Clippers team can be?
Yeah, it certainly could be. They finally looked like the team that we all thought they could be, and a big reason for that is Blake Griffin finally looked like Blake Griffin. We know Chris Paul is going to step up his game in the playoffs. He's done that throughout his career, and he did it again last night. I mean, I think some of the replays showed how he was kind of toying with Damian Lillard on some plays, and he's just in complete control of the game. But you know, Blake Griffin being out for so long, you know, having the suspension, having all the outside things. It's been a while since we've seen him play basketball, really. And it was good to see him kind of have that sort of a performance, that kind of a game where he really looked like himself again. And so, you know, I thought it was the best Blake's look since he came back from injury. You know, he was flying around, you know, making good plays, you know, within the offense. And that's a good sign for the Clippers if he's healthy, because when he's healthy and he's playing well, they become a very different team.
Last one I'll ask you about from Sunday before we look ahead to Monday's action, Detroit and Cleveland. Cleveland kind of did what they've done all year, where they just sort of looked relatively disinterested at the outset of the game. The big three wound up carrying them to the 106-101 victory. Cavs failed to cover the number, the only favorite that didn't cover the number yesterday. You know, for Cleveland, I mean, is this something that kind of masks the deficiencies that are on this team? Or, you know, is this just a case where they know they're winning this series and they're just kind of trying to save themselves for the rest of the postseason?
You know, I think it does mask the deficiencies on that team. I think we've all kind of sensed it as we've watched them throughout the season. They kind of skate by in a lot of ways. I mean, they're not a particularly, you know, intense team. I don't think they scare a lot of teams outside of that big three. You know they have to deal with Tristan Thompson on the glass and all that. But, you know, Detroit's got a big guy in Andre Drummond who should be able to handle him pretty easily. It's just a matter of, can you stop LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love? And, you know, Detroit is a good team, but they're a growing team. They don't have playoff experience, and they're still figuring a lot of things out there. The series is more about for them getting experience. But I think we kind of see this formula. We saw it throughout the regular season night, and I don't think Sunday changed anything. We see a team that's very reliant on three guys and isn't always super engaged in what they're doing and engaged in the process of becoming champions. And, you know, I'm sure that's a frustration for LeBron James because he knows what it takes and everyone wants to get there, but they just don't seem to be a good match or a good fit in a lot of ways. And I think we'll see that as the playoffs go on. I mean, I still expect them to continue winning, but I don't think it's going to be easy. And I think, you know, they're going to have games like this where their three main players score 80 points a night to win games. And especially later in the postseason, I think that's going to be a big problem.
I think one of the things that's concerning for the Pistons about yesterday's outcome is they were 15 of 29 from deep and still couldn't find a way to pull the upset victory in this game. And, you know, that has been one of the knocks about the Cavaliers here this over the last, you know, several months under Tyronn Lue, is that, you know, this is not a team that defends well. And if they're not going to defend the perimeter, it may not burn them here against Detroit. You know, Miami's not exactly a great jump shooting team. So, you know, maybe it doesn't really affect them against the Heat. But if they do run into a matchup where you face a team that can shoot it from deep, you know, that's how the Cavaliers would become vulnerable. And, of course, as we know, you know, Golden State would be that team. So, you know, I think if this does – the Cavs are going to move on. I don't know if it'll take four or five. It all depends on, you know, how invested they are when they go play at the Palace of Auburn Hills. But, you know, we are seeing problems with Cleveland that probably aren't going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, for sure. And I think they'll be challenged a little bit more in the East than people think. The Atlanta-Boston winner, those are two very good teams. I mean, I'm loving that Atlanta-Boston series, you know, from a prediction standpoint. I think that's probably going to be the most engaging and exciting first-round series. And game one was obviously very interesting. But even looking further ahead, should they make it there, Toronto is a fantastic shooting team. They're one of the best offenses in the league. And, you know, if Toronto were to make the Eastern Conference Finals, we obviously talked a little bit about them and some of their issues, but if they were to make it that far, you'd imagine they'd feel the confidence to let it fly and make shots confidently when it comes to that.
Well, we'll look at tonight's action here, beginning with Indiana and Toronto. Toronto, 7-point favorite, about the same number that we saw in game one. Of course, Toronto, you know, unable to come away with the victory there, played a very, very bad second half. They were okay in the first half, but in the second half, things just really got away from them. Do you see tonight's game going differently?
I do. I think the big thing that came out of game one was Dwayne Casey really struggled to make adjustments defending Paul George. I think we're going to see him either trust Norm Powell a little bit more or play Damari Carroll a little bit more, especially to guard Paul George, because I just don't think DeMar DeRozan can guard Paul George. just one-on-one there. George is too big for DeRozan, and even if DeRozan's giving it his best, it's just not going to be enough. The big thing that has to happen, though, is Jonas Valanciunas cannot get into foul trouble. I expect him to shoot a little bit better around the basket than he did in game one, but he early on in that game when Toronto seemed like they were in control, he was a big reason why. He was a really key player under the basket. He was collecting rebounds left and right. He was a big part of what they did. And in the second half, he was rendered almost completely ineffective because he was in foul trouble. You know, the other thing is you expect guys to kind of fall back to their mean, and Kyle Lowry, you know, there's no reason Kyle Lowry shouldn't dominate this series too. And so I'm kind of expecting Lowry to come back strong, have a big game, and that should loosen things up for DeRozan and make the Raptors work a little bit better. I'm expecting them to tie the series up.
Valanciunas had 11 offensive rebounds in 21 minutes in game one, which is ridiculous. The Pacers, yeah, high man in rebounds. They had two guys that had 7 rebounds total in game one. So if Toronto can get those second chance opportunities and knock down some more shots, particularly from deep, because they were only 4 of 19 from three, I think that this is a series that definitely, you know, goes to Indianapolis tied. Does Toronto cover the 7-point number here, or do they just kind of squeak by with a victory?
I'd say they cover. You know, I think they'll come out very determined and certainly very motivated to tie the series. Their backs are definitely against the wall. Whenever you have a road team win game one, you always get the sense that that they feel like they've accomplished something. They've already accomplished what they set out to do, and they'll maybe relax a little bit. Maybe Paul George doesn't have quite the game that he had on Saturday. So, you know, I'll go ahead and predict that Toronto covers the spread. They come out, take care of their business, and send the series back to Indiana tied at one.
Well, an interesting one tonight here between Dallas and Oklahoma City, not exactly from a who's going to win the game standpoint, but from a spread standpoint. The Thunder, 13.5-point favorites here. They outscored Dallas by 11 or more in each of the first three quarters in game one, put it in cruise control in the fourth quarter of this one, didn't really play anybody, only scored 15 points. Can Rick Carlisle's team make enough adjustments here to keep this one close?
You know, I am not someone to ever doubt Rick Carlisle. I think he's one of the best coaches in the NBA, and I suspect that he'll have some good adjustments, you know, maybe even some off-the-wall adjustments. Whether that's enough to stop Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, you know, I'm not sure. When those guys get rolling, there's very little any defense is going to be able to do about that. And Dallas certainly doesn't have necessarily the athletes or the skill to slow those guys down when they get rolling. I suspect we'll see a fair amount of zone defense played by Dallas, but you know, I'm not sure that's enough. You know, Oklahoma City is just simply a juggernaut. Dallas will need someone kind of unexpected maybe to step up and play a big game, or they'll have to find a way to muck things up and rely on Dirk to carry them through, which is not an easy thing to do at this stage of his career to rely on him to do that for a 7-game series. So, you know, I don't think Oklahoma City will win by as much as they did in game one, but certainly it's not looking good for Dallas, for that shorthanded Dallas team.
And that's really the big thing. I mean, Dirk Nowitzki, now in his age 37 season, I mean, this is a guy that's had a really, really tremendous career. But also, mm-hmm. You know, he's going to wear down. And, I mean, he has to absolutely carry this team this year. And it was a surprise that Dallas even made it into the playoffs. But now that they're here, you know, the Thunder, that's not a good draw for them at all. They don't really have an answer for Durant. They certainly don't have an answer for Westbrook. Enes Kanter had 16 and 13 in just 24 minutes of action in this game. Dallas just seems completely outmanned here. Now, again, if they make enough shots, which they didn't make very many shots in game one, they can keep it close. But I mean, this is going to be a very quick series, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we all kind of know, I think so too. I think it's going to be pretty much, you know, 4-game series, maybe Dallas steals one somewhere, but you know, the key for Oklahoma City, you know, that I think everyone wants to see, and this is probably what Dallas has to try and do, is get the game close entering the fourth quarter. We know Oklahoma City has problems in the fourth quarter. You want to kind of put that seed in their head and give yourself a chance. And that's where Dallas, I think, really has to really push. They have to play strong for three quarters, give themselves a chance. And I think that's where, you know, they're going to struggle some. And even then, you know, Oklahoma City's a good team. I just don't see a scenario where Dallas is able to pull away from them and win big. This is a series where Dallas is going to have to find a way to get a close game and win a close game. And that's not an easy thing to do against a team as good as Oklahoma City.
Last one coming up here tonight, Houston takes on Golden State. Golden State, 13.5-point favorite. It's been a steady stream of Golden State money in this game, pushing this number up a little bit. That's hardly a surprise. Golden State took a 27-point lead into halftime in game one, and it will probably go that way throughout most of the series. What is the problem here for the Rockets in this series? I mean, are they just completely outclassed from a talent standpoint, or is this a situation where – you know, they're going to continue getting blown out because this is a team that doesn't have a whole lot of heart, doesn't have a whole lot of character, and you know, they know they're not winning this series.
You know, I think it's a lot of the latter. I think this is just a Rockets team that just doesn't work well together. They don't play together very well. Especially, you know, and I know we saw it last year them you know, do this and be successful, but it's feast or famine when you're relying on James Harden to create all of your offense. And right now, he has to do everything, and Golden State defended him as well as you can in game one. They really, you know, I think he still got his points, but he didn't get to the free throw line very much, if at all. And Houston just doesn't have the support he needs to be successful, or he's not willing to trust his teammates enough to give him that support. I mean, I think the problem with Houston is just purely trust. They don't work well together. They don't play well together, and they're just frankly not a good team. They have talent. They should be able to compete with Golden State. I expect them, you know, maybe in game three to get a push for a win and have a good game. But, you know, even if Steph Curry doesn't play tonight, Golden State's just so good and so much better than them and so much together and cohesive. It's obvious Golden State enjoys playing with each other. They stick up for each other. They rotate, you know, they do all those things championship teams have to do. And Houston just doesn't do those things. And it's disappointing to see a team with so much promise and so much talent kind of not, you know, just kind of struggle with something as basic as, you know, do we want to play together on the floor today?
You know, I saw something from somebody I follow. He's actually a baseball follower. He's not an NBA fan at all. But one of the things that he had said, you know, over this past weekend was he had, you know, taken a cursory glance at what had happened in the NBA playoffs. And he basically said, you know, something to the effect of how, you know, really the first round in a lot of these series is just a chance for a star player to get hurt going forward. So you mentioned Steph Curry got the bad ankle. Who knows if he'll play tonight. But that's one of the worries about this series for me is that, you know, Houston, as I mentioned, not really a high character team. I would hate to see them do something that would, you know, seriously jeopardize Golden State's chances of winning this thing just because, you know, Houston is a warm body out there for Golden State to kick around.
Yeah, but I mean that's the risk of sport. I mean obviously, you know, the NBA playoffs might be a little bloated at 16 teams. I mean, I think the NBA sees value in getting some of these young teams a chance to experience playoff pressure. You know, we're not playing, you know, 162 games. Like 82 games is a lot of games, but you know, there's still always a chance for upsets. I mean, we've seen eight seeds beat one seeds in the NBA plenty, you know, not a whole lot, but plenty of times. And so it's not a thing that, you know, that I don't think the NBA is thinking about. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, anytime you step on the floor, there's a chance a player gets injured. I mean, Golden State's had the top seed, you know, wrapped up for a month or so now, and yet they, you know, they still sent Steph Curry out there, whether they were going for the record or whether they wanted to keep him in rhythm. That's just kind of how sports go. Whenever you step on the floor, there's a chance you could get hurt. But that's a chance you take. You know, you want to be in rhythm. Yeah. And sure, Houston's kind of being offered up as a sacrificial lamb, but you know, you ask some people if Houston's clicking on all cylinders. Yeah. Houston can certainly take a game from Golden State. They could maybe take two games from Golden State. Just the odds are that they won't. And the only way you can find out is if you play the games and, you know, you take that risk every time you step on the floor. And then, you know, I don't have a problem with it. You know, the only problem I have is I think regular season record needs to be recognized a little bit more than recognized more and given its, you know, due props or due recognition, because the playoffs are such a different animal than the regular season. But you hit this point of the season and you hit deeper in the playoffs, everyone's playing a little bit hurt. They've got a lot of miles on their legs. They've been playing a lot. And, you know, they've been playing, and if you're playing at a hard level, you're putting yourself out there every time. And, you know, there's no sense in hiding from that, and no sense, I think, in avoiding that. It's the way sports are.
This is way off the wall and something that's probably never been brought up, but would you ever be interested in maybe a best of five first round where the top two teams, you know, get byes or something like that?
I don't think you should do byes, but I would like to see the NBA go back to best of five with the first round. It was best of five until about 2003, if I'm not mistaken. And I should know that as a Magic fan, because Tracy McGrady famously said, I'm happy to be out of the first round when the Magic were up 3-1 in a best of seven series. And that was the first year that they had best of seven series. And this was the Magic as an eight seed, mind you. You know, there's definitely a sense that, yeah, the best of seven for the first round is a little bit of maybe a money grab, maybe a little bit of a, you know, let's give more basketball to the people when really the first round is in many ways a formality for a lot of people, for a lot of teams especially. And so it might be nice for them to go back to a best of five on this case, in this instance, and kind of get these games done a little bit quicker so we can move on to the real playoffs and the real, you know, teams that are looking to win a championship.
So while I got you on the air here, you mentioned this Boston-Atlanta series that you're really intrigued about, really fascinated with. We'll touch on that game here as well. These two teams play game two on Tuesday, so an extra day off for them. Atlanta, a 6-point favorite here in this one. You know, obviously they really dictated basically everything in the first half of that game. They were up 51-34, but Boston roared back in the second half. Brad Stevens' team made some good adjustments. What do you see going forward here in game two and then throughout the rest of the series?
Yeah, no, I see this as a back and forth affair. I think we're going to see the series go the distance, go to seven games. You know, Avery Bradley's injury though is concerning for Boston. He does a lot of good things for them, especially on the defensive end. And you know, they're going to, you know, they're a team that fills in gaps pretty well. Everyone usually steps up, but missing a key player is always a big thing. But at the same time, you know, Atlanta has been really rolling since the All-Star break. They really found, like, I think we talked about this like time and time again. And I was just like, Atlanta's going to figure things out. They're too good. They won't be where they were last year, but they'll figure things out. And lo and behold, they figured things out, got in the playoffs, and I think are a really, really dangerous team in the postseason now. Boston, though, is equally as tough. Brad Stevens is a really good coach. You know, he obviously hasn't had a chance to win a playoff game yet, but I think that'll change very soon. And, you know, I think every game is going to be very similar to Saturday's game. You might see a team pull ahead, but no team is far out of it, and it's going to come down to the wire more times than not. You know, I think Atlanta's offense is a little bit more consistent, so I give them a little bit of an edge, but I'm expecting Boston to come back strong Tuesday night, and, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see the series head to Boston tied at one at all. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they were 2-0 at that point. I think the teams are that close.
Well, that Avery Bradley injury, as you mentioned, is going to be a pretty important thing because somebody's got to slow down Jeff Teague and this Hawks, you know, big, really big three for them. I mean, Paul Millsap only had 14 points, but, you know, still a very, very good complimentary piece there to Al Horford and Jeff Teague. And, you know, the one thing, though, that can be an equalizer for the Celtics, and we did see this, you know, here in this game, is that they had 29 points off the bench to Atlanta's 16. And this was a game that, you know, at halftime, it looked like Atlanta was really going to dictate, really going to be able to use a lot of their bench players. But Boston, you know, their depth is something that has been talked about a lot throughout the season. And, you know, we'll have to see if it's something that they can, you know, use a little bit more to their advantage here moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And Boston's depth is their biggest strength for sure. And they use it. They find the guys that are playing well and they use it. So it's going to be very interesting to see what adjustments Brad Stevens makes. I think everyone talks about how good of a coach he is, and he obviously did a really good job with the team in the regular season. The playoffs are a little bit of a different animal though, and And I'm interested to see how they adjust and react on Tuesday.
So Philip Rossman-Reich from Orlando Magic Daily. I know it's the off season now for the Magic. What do you have going on over there?
We're doing our season recap this week. We're doing what went right and what went wrong for the Magic. We have a pair of articles going up today. The first one is what went right, talking about what Scott Skiles, the head coach, did right this year, and we'll have the other side of that coin and then what he did wrong this season as we put a bow on the 2016 season and start looking ahead to the summer.
Phil, a lot of good stuff as always, man. Great to talk to you. Hope everything's going well for you there, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Talk to you again soon. Thank you very much for having me on.
Good stuff there from Philip Rossman-Reich from Orlando Magic Daily, talking here about the NBA playoffs. Be right back after a quick note from DSI Sportsbook.
This segment of Bang the Book Radio is brought to you by the best DSI Sportsbook. DSI is one of the industry leaders in customer service, wagering options. It offers an exclusive 300% deposit bonus to readers of BangTheBook.com and listeners of Bang the Book Radio. Simply sign up with a promo code BANG300. Again, that's BANG300 and start winning today.
That 300% deposit bonus over at DSI Sportsbook, 100% for the Sportsbook, 100% for the Poker Room, 100% for the Live Casino, so take advantage of that. Or if you want a risk-free, no-strings-attached promo code, you can head on over to DSI Sportsbook, use the promo code BANG10, get a free $10 bet credited to your account just for signing up. So take advantage of one of those two offers from our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. We'll stick with the NBA theme here. Go ahead and get into the Monday edition of Cole Ryan's Betting the Buckets.
Thank you, Adam. And it is the NBA playoffs time, and that means a super edition of Betting the Buckets. I'm all excited about the games that have been played and the ones that are upcoming, so I'm going to get things started by touching on a few games beyond the box score style. I'm also going to talk about the zigzag theory, which is a handicapping theory for those of you who are not familiar with it. Talk about the injury that everyone should be focusing on. We'll talk about referees. I'll let you know if you should take a pause or panic after the early results in the NBA. Feature members of the Buckets Brigade, and of course, offer up picks for Monday and Tuesday in the NBA playoffs. Show's blazing quick with a pick. Let's get it going. Beyond the box score, the thing that jumped out this week is that underdogs took it on the head, especially on Sunday. Chalk went 3-1, 2-2 on Saturday, so overall it was a profitable weekend for the Chalk. But what really jumped out to me is blowouts. I mean, the favorites weren't only winning, but they were covering easily. They were starting early, getting a big lead, and then just running away with not only the win, but the cover. A few of the things that stood out to me, Miami Heat, they scored 41 points in the first quarter to tie one franchise playoff record. They set another with the 123 points, which beat the 121 mark they had in the 2002 NBA Finals, and they never trailed in a basketball game. They dominated the Hornets. They took the Hornets out of their strategy, which is really to shoot threes. They were dominated in the paint. The Hornets were in trouble. Heat got an easy win. The biggest upset of the week, of course, was the Pacers, who beat the Raptors. Paul George, he was the story. He shot 2-for-9 in the first half, then 10-of-13 in the second half. He got red hot. On the other side, all-star guards Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, they both had some big, big, big struggles. Lowry, 3-of-13. DeRozan, 5-of-19. Combined, they went 1-of-10 from three-point range and 8-of-15 from the free throw line. The best part is nothing is settled yet. It's NBA basketball. Usually they say that it's not a real series until a home team loses, which is why that Pacers game really shot off the schedule as far as games that were very important, which ones weren't. Which brings me to my next point, which is the zigzag theory. For those of you that don't know, the zigzag theory, it seems like it's been around forever. And basically the theory says if a team loses in the first game, take them in the second game. Sounds real easy. I mean, the concept is that if a team loses in the first game, it's the playoffs, so they really have to play that much harder in the second one. Some numbers with this: playoff teams coming off a straight-up loss have gone 409-377 against the spread. That's 52%. Teams who failed to cover in their previous game have gone 414-385 against the spread. That's another 52% clip. Not really anything to write home about to me. Some of the other numbers that I found that kind of stood out since the start of the 2005 season, favorites coming off a straight-up loss have gone 201 of 179 against the spread. That's 53%. Favorites who failed to cover the spread in their last game have gone 218 of 196 against the spread. Again, that's 53%. Look, truth be told, this is an outdated theory. It's fun to look at. It's got some premise to it. It may even pay out in certain areas, but I don't think it's one that should be followed blindly. I really think the odds makers have adjusted. The zigzag theory, to me, I don't want to say it's dead. It's still out there, but if you follow it blindly, you're going to be in for some big trouble, or you're going to get about even results, and that's not what you want when you bet on basketball or anything for that matter. So now let's talk about an injury. Everybody's talking about the Stephon Curry injury. He sprained his ankle, or at least that's what it looks like. It could be a little more severe than that, but he's going to play, if not in Game 2, where I think they should rest him, but he's going to play in this series again. To me, the big loss, Celtics' Avery Bradley, he's got a hamstring injury. This is not an injury he's going to recover from. He's not going to play, from everything I read, in the rest of this series. He may be available if they make it to the next round, which I don't think they're going to, but he is a key two-way player. He thrives on speed. Without him, if Brad Stevens wants to stick with that small lineup that works so well in the second half against Atlanta, it's going to stretch other players' minutes. It's going to make them tired down the stretch, or it's going to force Brad Stevens to rely on one of his rookies, R.J. Hunter or Terry Rozier. By the way, they've both showed glimpses of good play, but now we're looking for rookies to play well in the playoffs. It's never a good thing. They look good, but I really think the bench is going to be a big problem if a veteran misses a big chunk of time, and that's what you're going to get in Avery Bradley. I think that's a big deal, so keep an eye out on that. Plus, I want to talk about the refereeing, the officiating. Well, you have to understand, when you handicap NBA basketball, is that it's a whole different season, and it definitely was on display this weekend. I really hate when the refs take control of the game, and I hate even more when people complain about it, so I try not to do it. I did find myself doing it this weekend to friends and family, but there were things that stood out. Think about this. James Harden, now granted, the Rockets are best and the Warriors are the much better team, but he was getting called for offensive fouls on plays that he's been getting the call on all season long. So now these superstars have to adjust their play a little bit. To me, that's going to affect a player and affect the team. And plus, home teams are getting more calls. Think about the Hawks. They were awarded 35 free throws to Boston's 19. The Hawks were in the penalty, in the bonus, in the third quarter with 10 minutes to go. I don't think I've ever seen that in my life, and I've watched a lot of NBA. So that, to me, was an egregious officiating move. But look, they are taught, hey, let's go in there, control that game early. Let's officiate it a bit different. So I'm not going to blame anybody. Teams have to adjust. Therefore, handicappers have to adjust. Coaches are adjusting. Brad Stevens got a T in the Celtics game. By the way, his first technical foul since February 22nd of 2014. That shows you how little he argues the calls. And then what happened the very next play? The Celtics got a call. It worked. Stan Van Gundy, he blew up in the media about the calls that LeBron James gets or doesn't get offensively. So there's a lot of changes going on. You really have to approach NBA basketball differently when you handicap it during the playoffs, I'm telling you. And that leads me to my next portion of the segment, panic or pause. Basically, I wanted to bring this up because I see a lot of overreaction on Twitter, no surprise, and everywhere else, because that's just part of the game. It happens a lot in all sports, but to me it happens even more during the NBA playoff time, because this is a series. This isn't a one-game set like March Madness, yet people will talk about it like it is. So I'm going to tell you whether you should overreact and panic, or if you should pause and take a step back, because the team's going to be okay. First one I'm talking about is the Hornets. I want you to pause here. The Hornets were outshot 58% to 43%, and that's amazing to me. They were also outshot long range, 50 to 35%, and they held a 75% advantage at the free throw line too. So to me, they outshot everywhere. They were red hot. They broke records. Everybody's saying the Heat is now the team that's going to challenge the Cavs in the Eastern Conference. Take a pause. The Hornets aren't out of this yet. If you're looking to panic, it's the Houston Rockets. I mean, this team did not play with any enthusiasm whatsoever. I wish the Jazz made the playoffs. I think it would have been a closer series, plain and simple. They came out. They played selfish. It was awful. Again, if you're going to pause with the Raptors. I know they lost the game. I know they lost home court advantage. So everybody is already selling the Raptors. Take a pause. Take a deep breath. It was an early game. The Raptors struggling in early spots. They knew they were going to. If you read between the lines with the coach, he talked about how they were unhappy with that spot. They could not have had a worse outing from their stars, a better outing from Paul George. This is far from over. What I really did notice that caught my attention is that the point spread didn't adjust from game one to game two. So if the odds makers are not panicking, neither should you. One more game, the Boston Celtics, it's time to panic. The small lineup's not going to always work. Now they're going to have depth problems, with the injuries to Avery Bradley and Olenek. He's got a shoulder injury. He only played 12 minutes. Atlanta only shot 5 of 27 from 3-point range during game one. They dominated the paint, outscored the Celtics by 16, dominated the rebounds. They're killers from the free throw line. They had a bad night from the free throw line and went 27 of 35. This series is over. If you're a fan of the Celtics, like me, by the way, hit the panic button. This one's over. Okay, with that in mind, let's get to the picks. I have a few for Monday, a few for Tuesday. You know I don't like chalk, but get ready. I'm dishing out some favorites. I'm going to take the Toronto Raptors -7 in game two over Indiana. I think this is a game they need. Their back's against the wall. I still think they're a better team than Indiana. I don't think Paul George is going to have that same kind of night. They win and pull away in the end. They cover that 7. I'm also going to take the Dallas Mavericks plus the points. Give me the 13.5 in game two. Oklahoma City looked great, no doubt about it. But Dallas Mavericks, they're a veteran team. They're not going to let that kind of blowout loss affect them. I think they keep this game close. I don't think they're going to win, but I think the 13.5 points is a gift. I think you're going to see a lot of inflated lines due to the fact there were plenty of blowouts. So give me Toronto -7. Give me Dallas Mavericks plus the 13.5 on Monday night. On Tuesday night, I'm going to take the Atlanta Hawks. I see -6 out there. I'd wait to game time. I don't know if it's going to drop to 5.5, but I think they cover the 6. They dominated the Celtics in the paint. They dominated in fast break. Now the fact that the Celtics don't have a lot of bench room, they're going to be playing rookies, I think that means the Hawks are going to pull away and win big in the second half. Give me Atlanta Hawks for Tuesday night -6. Those are my 3 picks, and that is the segment. Thanks for tuning in. And remember to follow me on Twitter to join the Buckets Brigade. My Twitter handle is @ColeRyan9. That's @ColeRyan and the number 9. And enjoy the NBA playoffs like the Buckets Brigade member, AK, who predicted the Pacers would beat the Raptors, and he's off to a good start. And also I have new followers like Cody and familiar faces like Filthy TV as we talk about NBA playoff basketball all the time. So good luck during the NBA playoffs and win big betting the Buckets.
Excellent stuff there, as always, from Cole Ryan. As he said, it's very simple to become a member of the Buckets Brigade. Simply follow him on Twitter, @ColeRyan, and the number 9, talk hoops with a lot of like-minded individuals, a good group of people over there. So now's a great time to do so with the NBA playoffs going on. Speaking of playoffs, the NHL playoffs are still humming right along here. We've got 3 games coming up on Monday night: Washington, Philadelphia, Dallas, Minnesota, Los Angeles, San Jose. Game 3 in all of those series, so the home team shifts now. Washington up 2-0 in their series. And, you know, looking at the Capitals here, a -140 favorite on the road, a lot of people were, you know, looking at this Philadelphia team and saying that they had a decent shot to win this series, or at the very least, a decent shot to take the Capitals deep into the series. And, you know, I was, to say the least, I was unimpressed with some of those predictions, and I'm still at that same point. You know, I look at this Philadelphia team, and they don't have enough offense. They just don't have enough goal scoring to compete with Washington. They don't have the depth up and down the lineup. Now, the old adage is that, you know, you're not in trouble until you lose a game at home in a playoff series, and that's kind of changed a little bit. I think home field, home court, home ice advantage, all those things may be a little bit overblown there in the first couple games of the playoffs. I think as you get deeper into the series, it means a little bit more, you know, because you've had time to make adjustments, all those types of things. But Philadelphia, you know, outscored 6-1 in these 2 games in Washington. Now the thing goes back to Philly. Steve Mason's not played particularly well in this series. That's a problem for the Flyers. You know, you look at the NBA playoffs and a team needs to shoot the ball well from deep to pull off an upset. It's the same thing with the, you know, March Madness. In the NHL, to pull off upsets, you have to have the better goaltender. the Philadelphia Flyers do not have the better goaltender. Braden Holtby playing very, very well. He only had 3 shutouts in the regular season. He picked one up in game 1 here and then only gave up 1 goal in game 2. This is the issue for Philadelphia. You know, if they can keep games low scoring, play a lot of 3-2, 2-1 types of games, you know, that may work for them. But it has to be Steve Mason who's holding Washington to a goal or 2 goals. And right now it looks like it's going to be Braden Holtby that's going to be that guy. So I look at this one tonight. I understand the move on Philadelphia. I understand, you know, that the Flyers have gone down about 10 cents here so far. But for me, you know, maybe Philadelphia does win tonight. Washington still wins this series. I think what we see here with this line move is that we see all these people that want to be validated about Philadelphia, that desperately want to be able to say, well, they didn't get swept. They lost a 1-goal game at the start, or, you know, they lost a 2-goal game at the start, however you want to put it. I mean, it was essentially a 1-goal game. You know, and look, they won game 3, and yeah, they lost in 5, but they won a game and so on and so forth and all this stuff. You know, everybody wants to be able to stroke his or her own ego. And sometimes we see that play out here in the NHL playoffs, where, you know, we're going to see people that want to take Philadelphia based solely on the fact that they thought the Flyers were going to make this a series or were going to pull an upset. Maybe Philadelphia does win tonight. Maybe I'm just a little bit jaded. Washington's, you know, probably my second favorite NHL team behind Buffalo. But it also means that I know the Capitals and I know what their strengths and weaknesses are. And I never at any point thought that this was a really good matchup for the Flyers. You know, I thought that Philadelphia could steal game 1 because Washington hadn't played, you know, a meaningful game in a while. But Washington played well in game 1. And that was all I needed to see. That was all I needed to know, that this team is focused. This is a team that's had a lot of playoff disappointments in you know, recent franchise history. This is a team that wants to go the distance. And the way you do that is by taking care of lesser teams in short series. So for Washington, yeah, they're up 2-0. Yeah, they've got some room for error, all this type of stuff. This is not a team that wants to play 6 or 7 games against Philadelphia. There's no benefit to that whatsoever. So Washington's going to come to play in all of these games. Maybe Philadelphia was a value pick at 130. Maybe. Not so much. I'm staying away from this game. Wouldn't surprise me if either team wins it, to be honest with you. But it would really surprise me if this series goes back to Washington, you know, 2-2. It's either Capitals 3-1 or they just finish this thing in 4. Because this is a juggernaut of a team. This team, if you want to put it in a relative sense, this team had a regular season that was a lot like the San Antonio Spurs. It wasn't Golden State. It wasn't historic. But it was really, really damn good. And there's a reason for that. And they're going to keep showing that reason here in this series against Philadelphia. This series is over in 4 or 5. But, you know, as I said, no real value in the number tonight, I don't think. But, you know, again, I mean, it is one of those situations where, you know, I think they just see people trying to back Philadelphia just because they think it's kind of trendy. And like I said, Philadelphia may win, and I may wind up looking like a jackass here, but I really think it's just, you know, I really think it's just exactly that. You've got Dallas and Minnesota here. Dallas up 2-0 in this series. Minnesota now taking things back home. Of course, you know, the big thing here is going to be what happens with the injury situation for the Wild. No Zach Parise again tonight, and Minnesota scored 1 goal in 2 games, and they really haven't done much offensively. So how do things suddenly get different with home ice? You know, I mean, Ryan Suter plays so much anyway for Minnesota that you're getting the matchup that you want with Ryan Suter. You know, you're getting Suter out there against the top guys because he's playing 29 minutes a game. You know, there aren't a whole lot of shifts where the third and fourth line guys are out there. So what does John Torchetti do in this game to try and change things up? I don't know. I think it was a win for Minnesota to keep Dallas to 2 goals in game 2. I've been very surprised with how this series has played out. I figured we kind of have more of an up and down series, but Dallas is making a commitment to defense. They're making a commitment to possessing the puck, and it's impressive. You know, I mean, I didn't really expect Lindy Ruff's team to be able to play, you know, a tight checking affair like they did in game 2. Is game 3 going to be more of the same? I don't know. Maybe it could be. And one of the things that worries me about close games for Dallas is that they do not have the better goaltender in this series. So when you talk about close, low scoring games, it's about making saves. And Antti Niemi, Kari Lehtinen, whoever's out there for Dallas, I don't really trust either one of them to make the big saves when they need to. Devan Dubnyk, I would probably trust him a little bit more. But here we are, Dallas up 2-0. Here you've got Dallas a minus 130 favorite. And look, you know, this is really the series for Minnesota. People talk about must win games when you're down, you know, when you're facing an elimination game, but you can't go down 3-0 to a team that's far more talented than you are. And that's the spot that Minnesota's in here tonight. Again, no Zach Parise. That's a big, big worry. One of the things that's been nice for Dallas here in this series is that some of the role players are stepping up and playing well. You know, Tyler Seguin missed game one. It hasn't been all about Jamie Benn. Jason Spezza was terrific in game one. But Dallas is getting contributions up and down the lineup. For Minnesota, they got contributions in the regular season, but they need Zach Parise. I mean, you look at how some of these other series have gone. You know, like, for example, you look at the next one here between San Jose and Los Angeles. You know who's been the best player in this series? Joe Pavelski. You know whose team is up 2-0? Joe Pavelski's team. Your big players, your big guns need to step up here in the playoffs. And Minnesota's can't because he's not in the lineup. So, you know, I look at this one and I think that, you know, I think Minnesota may steal one of these two games, whether it be game three or game four. Unfortunately, I'm not going to have a strong opinion on this game either, but you know, it's a must-win game for Minnesota. I know that people like to throw around must-win kind of in willy-nilly fashion, but you cannot, absolutely cannot go down 3-0 to the Dallas Stars because Dallas is just way too talented. They'll find a way to win one of those last four games, whether they have to do it in game seven or not. They're just way, way too talented. So, yeah, we had a winner in this series on the under 5 in game one. You know, the under came through again in game two. So we've seen a little bit of an adjustment here where now the under is only about plus 105, which is, you know, not what people expected here entering this series. Something will probably give. There will probably be a high-scoring game in this series at some point. I don't know if it'll be tonight, but you know, that's one thing you want to watch is you want to watch how these numbers adjust from game to game and also from venue to venue. You had Dallas as a $2 favorite in games one and two, essentially. Now here, they're a minus 130 favorite. Is Minnesota's home ice worth 70 cents? I certainly don't think so. I don't think so at all. You have this must-win perception, and people are going to play into that, but Minnesota's home ice is worth 70 cents? Hell no. Absolutely not. If Zach Parise was playing plus home ice plus, I don't know, Jamie Benn fell down the stairs, maybe that would be a 70-cent line move. But, you know, I think because of that, Dallas is probably your value pick here at minus 130 because they're the better team. And that's a big, big over-adjustment for home ice advantage. And then in this last one here tonight, Los Angeles and San Jose. San Jose, about a minus 125 favorite at some shops, depending on where you look, minus 120, minus 115. This number is kind of all over the board. And again, you've got one of these spots where you've got a team with its back against the wall. People are looking at the Kings, who are a series favorite, and they're saying, well, you know, they're not going to go down 3-0. No, maybe they won't, but I look at this one and, you know, to me, it looks like San Jose is not getting enough respect here still. I mean, we see a 70-cent home ice advantage line move in that Dallas-Minnesota series. We see San Jose, you know, move about, what, 50 cents, 55 cents for being at home. I think you have to look at this series as San Jose has been the better team in the first two games. You know, Martin Jones has been the better goaltender in the first two games, which is not something I expected at all going up against Jonathan Quick. But the Sharks, you know, they've been through this before. They were up 3-0 in 2014, blew that series. It shouldn't come as that much of a shock that San Jose is up 2-0 in this series because they were the best road team in the NHL last year or this season, 28-10-3, which is really, really good. Also, for what it's worth, this is the game I previewed over at bangthebook.com. So if you want some more, you can check that out. But for me, I've got to look at the Sharks tonight, particularly if you can catch one of these better numbers out there, five dimes showing minus 110. BetOnline, buck 17, Pinnacle, buck 13. I don't see a Los Angeles team that's making enough adjustments to win this series. You know, the Sharks have not played well at home this year, but we saw last year with the Tampa Bay Lightning, who were awful on the road, play extremely well on the road in their first three series. They were down 3-2 going to Detroit in the first round, won game six on the road, you know, won some big games on the road in all of their series. It really, once you get to the second season, it doesn't matter as much. And for the Sharks here tonight, you know, a team on a mission. Again, Joe Pavelski's been their best player. That's what you need. Joe Thornton, 17 out of 26 in the faceoff circle. You look at the Kings, Andre Kopitar got beat for a goal in game one, didn't do a whole lot in game two. You know, Tyler Toffoli hasn't done much. He was their leading goal scorer this season. So for Los Angeles, their key guys are passengers right now. And for San Jose, their key guys are driving the bus. Brent Burns, goal and a couple assists. I already talked about Pavelski and Thornton. Logan Couture's got a goal and a helper. Everybody that needs to contribute for San Jose is doing it. And when you can do that, when you don't have to put any offensive pressure on your third and fourth line guys, those guys that just come out there to bring energy, change momentum, play with physicality, that's when you've got a recipe for success in the playoffs. So I like San Jose here tonight. With every game that Martin Jones wins and plays well in, he's picking up confidence, and that's very, very dangerous for Los Angeles. So I'll take San Jose tonight as a short favorite. I think they're not getting enough respect from the odds makers here in this number. And you know, we'll see if they're able to take this thing to a 3-0 series lead, and then things will get really interesting because, you know, every headline, every lead will be about how they blew that 3-0 series advantage back in 2014. Looking at the MLB card for today, I know there's only about 4 minutes left streaming live here, which is fine because it's not a great MLB card at all whatsoever. You know, we've got Noah Syndergaard and Jared Eichhoff in the Mets-Phillies game. One interesting thing about this game is this will be Eichhoff's 11th major league start. This will be his 5th career start against the New York Mets. So he's definitely seen a lot of this Mets offense, which was pretty good in Cleveland over the weekend. And Syndergaard's just elite. I mean, there's no real betting value on this game at minus 180 unless you want to use the Mets as a parlay piece somewhere. Maybe like a we don't really have an NHL favorite big enough to advocate something like that. But if you do want to throw the Mets into something, I think they take care of business tonight. My picks and analysis article, I took a little bit of extended look at Jordan Lyles and Dan Straley in the Colorado-Cincinnati game. With where this number has gone now, the Rockies sitting at plus 120, you can get them almost as high as plus 130 at five dimes. Colorado's your value pick in this game for sure. The Rockies, you know, with Lyles is not a good pitcher. Neither is Dan Straley. I talked a little bit about Dan Straley. He's gone to the Driveline Baseball Facility in Washington, run by Kyle Bodie, who does fantastic things with developing pitcher velocity. So Straley may be a guy that could be worth a look down the line. But you look at Lyles, pretty league average away from Coors Field. And I think against a guy like Straley, that's got some value. So I think Colorado in the plus 120 range, definitely worth a look here tonight. I'm kind of surprised to see where this number has been going, to be honest with you. Washington, Miami, no real value here. Well, actually, there is value here on Washington, but that's only if you want to go against Jose Fernandez, which not really a recipe for making money. But with the way Washington's playing right now, plus 145, plus 150 against just about anybody, there's probably some value in doing that. Hector Santiago, Carlos Rodon. This is an interesting game. We saw a pretty interesting line move this morning where Rodon got steamed, and then we saw money come buying back on Santiago. So a strange little line move there in that one. I talked a little bit more about this game in my picks and analysis article, gave you some good thoughts on that. So please head on over to bangthebook.com and check that out. John Lackey and Mike Leake in the Cubs-Cardinals game. How about this Cardinals offense so far? Third in home runs, second in WOBA. Been very, very good so far this season. Lackey, you know, a guy that regression was coming for. He had an 82.6% strand rate last year that led to a 2.57, I want to say, ERA. FIP and XFIP up there a little bit. Figure he'll probably regress toward those FIP and XFIP marks from last season. So he'd probably be in about the 365, 370 type range from an ERA standpoint. The problem here is I don't really like Mike Leake. So this is a stay away game for me. Chase Anderson, Phil Hughes. Interesting one here in this game. Chase Anderson, you know, goes from Arizona to Milwaukee, a guy that I like, but I don't like this park factor for him. I don't really like this Brewers defense for him. He's pitching in American League Park here. And if you go look at his interleague numbers, which somebody out there is going to cite, if you buy picks from somebody, they're going to say, well, Chase Anderson in 7 interleague starts, this and that. I think he's got like a 2.68 ERA, something like that. But look at the context. Chase Anderson's interleague starts, one of them has come in an American League Park. So he's faced a designated hitter one time in a regular season game. That game was at U.S. Cellular Field in 2014. The White Sox offense was atrocious. It was a train wreck. So in this one, as much as I don't like Phillip Hughes, there's probably a little bit of value on the Twins here in this game because Anderson, you know, facing a lineup with an extra hitter, doesn't miss a lot of bats, doesn't strike out a lot of guys. Two of his 9 strikeouts this season are against a pitcher. So you know, I think there's some value on Hughes. I don't like it necessarily. But, you know, just an interesting little wagering angle there. For those streaming live, I've got about 10 seconds left streaming live. I've got one more game to get to, so just catch the archive version of the show for the last few seconds here. Last game, Arizona-San Francisco, Archie Bradley with his 2016 debut for the Diamondbacks against Jake Peavy. I expected this number to open a lot higher. So I like San Francisco in this one. I thought this number would open about 15 to 20 cents higher. Open minus 135. Peavy sucked in his last start, and that's putting it nicely. But that last start was in Colorado, where a lot of guys suck. So back here at AT&T Park, you know, Archie Bradley, he's not going to work deep into this game. And Arizona, long game on Saturday. A lot of their bullpen guys with a chance to work three straight today or three games in 4 days. Early in the year, that's a little bit dicey. I like San Francisco. I'll lay the chalk tonight. A little bit of a chalky night in MLB. You know, if I was looking, I'd take Hughes and I'd take the Twins, the Giants, and Colorado. Not necessarily in that order, but you can check out my picks and analysis article over at bangthebook.com. One thing I want to throw your way here today before I wrap up today's show, Thursday's show, 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time live recording. Rest of the shows this week will be 11 a.m., but we've got a UFC event coming up here this weekend. So in order to help accommodate Jay Primetown from MMA Oddsbreaker, right there after the 12 o'clock hour, we're going to do 11:30 to 12:30 for Thursday. And again, as I said last week, when we have UFC events, this is going to be a regular thing where the Thursday show is 11:30 to 12:30. So keep that in mind. Tomorrow I'll be joined by Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. Wednesday we'll hear from Wes Reynolds. Thursday, Jordan Bianchi, NJ Primetown. And then Friday, I think I'm going to have something special for you on the NFL draft. So that's something you can look ahead to on Friday. And we'll see what else the rest of the week holds. But that'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.